Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. I'm your host, Ken Seymour. Today, I have an excellent episode for you. I have an actress who has, let us say, a strong knowledge of how to tickle your funny bone. We have the magnificent Carolyn Bridget Kennedy.
Hello.
How are you today?
I am fantastic. Thank you.
So, I love to start at the beginning with, generally going into a little history, but to just get ahead of myself, because I love to get ahead of myself. My wife tells me that repeatedly. I was looking at your set of skills that you had, and I don't know if any of you listeners have ever had a chance to look at some of the people that we've had on. They always have some interesting sets of skills about what they can bring to the table when they're going to do a piece. And I saw one very interesting listed skill on your resume that I have to ask if it has ever come up and helped you in any way. It says that you are a paralegal.
That is correct. Actually, oddly, yes, it's a very special set of skills, a little different than Liam Neeson's. Paralegal definitely helps me in many ways. I'm very, very organized. I spreadsheet everything. As an actor, I keep track of everything since the beginning of my acting career, every person I've ever seen or met, every project I've auditioned for, what role, the descriptions of the characters. It's done like a massive insanity spreadsheet, but I keep track of all those things. I would also say the terminology and the language, I'm very comfortable and familiar with that. It was specifically personal injury law, so I can spell and easily say otorhinolaryngologist. There's a lot of unusual things. So, when I talk about preeclampsia and I'm being the OBGYN, it's very natural dialogue and understanding. I have been in a courtroom, so I'm very comfortable emulating being in a courtroom. And I would say reading contracts, paperwork, I'm always thinking about what's the thing that I don't know and, all the possibilities. So it's a great skill to have, especially when you're a creative person, you can keep everything highly organized and then be creative on the other side of things.
You know, I already knew I liked you even before we started talking, but as soon as you start talking spreadsheets, near and dear to my heart, I can't get by without them. If you get me alone and I'm bored and I start talking to one of my friends and they say, no, not about the comic book spreadsheet again. We don't need to hear that. It's like, but I added a new couple of columns. It really gives you a better understanding of, the time and place that these kind of, no. Just leave it be.
Yes.
So is that how you started out then? Did you start out in law and then have a sudden decision to make a career shift?
Yes, I did. I was a paralegal for over 20 years and I was working in a cubicle and just doing my thing. I happened to meet a person who one day just said to me, oh, you're quite funny. You should consider being an actor. And I'm like, say what? This is something people can do. I didn't appreciate being in Canada, the spot where I was, that this is even an industry that existed there. And so I ended up taking an acting class when they said, they knew someone who was taking classes. I took a class and man, did I get hooked. I ended up doing background on a CBC show called Heartland. And I was like just in awe of the whole production, the scale of things, this like little underworld that I knew nothing of. And I quite enjoyed it. And I remembered somebody said something to me, if you really want to be an actor and you're living in a region where there's not a lot of film and television, make your own content. So I took that to heart and I ended up throwing myself into all things writing, producing, taking lighting courses, taking grip courses, understanding how to be a first assistant director on a set, taking any jobs that I could to understand every position on set. And I wrote and produced and acted in my own material because, of course, if you want to act, you need something to show that you can act. If you want to get a good part for yourself, sometimes you need to write that part for yourself. Then if you write it, it's on paper, but nobody sees it. So then you need to produce that part. So it was kind of a necessary evil to learn all those different positions, in order to get those first projects made. Ultimately, the web series that I made back in 2016-17 and a short film I made ended up doing the festival circuit and winning awards in Seoul, Korea. I had podcast interview in the Netherlands. It got some awards in Great Britain and Germany. And then ultimately Los Angeles, I got a nomination for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy. And I flew to LA for the first time in 2017. And my web series I shot in Canada in my home, 38 minutes of it screened in Sony Studios in LA. So that opened the door to a visa for acting, writing, and producing all three fields. And when that visa came into fruition, my husband and I had a long conversation about not wanting to be 95 years old and wondering what would have happened if you went to LA. So we decided to make some sacrifices, and for 6.5 years, we have been living in two different countries, seeing each other, you know, every 3 weeks to a month when one of us flies in one direction or the other, and having some time and essentially having a FaceTime marriage. And of course, everything has been totally unregrettable, and I've been having the time of my life with the amazing things that have happened, because I never would have ever dreamt in my lifetime that I would be living in LA and getting to do such a wonderful, fun thing.
Well, no one ever wants to be away from the people that matter to them in their lives, but I have to imagine that in some ways there would be a certain tangible benefit, you know, the whole heart grows fonder over a distance sort of a thing. So with the time you do get to spend together, it's got to be excellent. Plus, he gets to see you succeed at something, and I know that's rewarding in a way that a lot of people can't understand.
Yes, and it's entertaining because I do tell some people this story, and that, you know, they have to be in another country for my husband, and they're like, "That sounds amazing." I'm like, "No, perhaps maybe with somebody else, you know,
in I've a met previous your husband.
Relationship, I would have been happy to be in another country from someone else. But I finally found, you know, the puzzle piece of my life. And then now, ironically, I'm in another country. But yes, he is my puzzle piece. And it is only with his support and encouragement that I've been able to obviously pursue something so fun and wonderful. And we've been able to share and enjoy these victories and wonderful experiences together, which has, you know, enriched both our lives in such a wonderful way.
So when you made this transition and attacked it from the multiple angles that you did, I feel like this would give you a unique experience that a lot of other people coming into the industry wouldn't have. So I have to, one of my favorite questions to ask that I don't want to say I'm disappointed by the answer often, but because a lot of the people I talk to have a more traditional entrance into the industry and they're kind of brought up in it or they're used to it, they miss that early moment of wonder where you're kind of getting it all thrown out at you. So when you first started learning the different aspects of what was involved in this, what was something that maybe surprised you the most that was involved?
Of all of filmmaking, or the actual, you know, acting, casting portion, in what regard?
Any part, whether it's the acting part or whether it's like, well, I didn't realize that we had to have somebody in this position to do this thing for that, you know, aspect of it.
Sure. I think, you know, even small things that you don't realize you're seeing in the filmmaking that send subliminal messages to you. For instance, The Matrix, I learned, is done with a green wash over the entire time, every time they're in The Matrix. I found that amazing. Superhero films tend to have like a bluish wash. So, you know, these subliminal messages, the angles of the camera, you know, literally in Stranger Things, if you go to the upside down, they will take you in the upside down. And the way the camera is used to convey things in storytelling, you know, positions of power, looking up, you know, these other, you know, looking, making someone look smaller by changing the angle down. So camera things like that really got me. The writing of things and understanding, now I almost watch television with subtitles because I enjoy the writing and seeing the writing, and I can picture the great writing minds behind it who have come up with these incredible words. The difficulty of executing acting with ease, because there's a lot of people who are like, well, that's easy. You just go and you say some words. It's definitely not that. So I have a ton of respect and understanding for people's, especially like very good actors, how hard they work, how hard they train, how they are in classes all the time, even when they work on series or have already been a series regular on a show. They are so hungry to be better all the time and chasing the next part and character and thing that will help them just for the work of it. It's such a tremendous thing. Like, for example, Jason Alexander, while he was on Seinfeld, worked with Larry Moss, who I've been fortunate enough to work with several times. And he would work on Shakespeare during the evening while he was on set during Seinfeld during the day. So, the incredible hunger that people have to the love they have for what they're doing, that it's all encompassing. I am so in awe of that. And as well, perhaps how hard people work, who are on SNL, the trajectory of the Groundlings program, and people who are writing their own material and the hours of preparation to come up with characters that are different from themselves. And the difficulty, say, for example, Lisa Kudrow, who does an amazing job playing a very unintelligent character, Phoebe on Friends, how much work that takes to create an unintelligent character. It really requires someone very intelligent. So I am in awe about so many things. I know I've given you several very different things right there, but yes.
Well, that's the joy of the industry, though, being able to see how the cake gets made is sometimes as good as having a slice at the end of it. Sometimes it's better.
Yes.
So again, kind of putting yourself into all of these different roles and all these different aspects. Do you have a preference? Just like, well, if I had my druthers and I had, more projects than I could deal with, I would rather act than write, or I'd rather write than direct. Or do you have that kind of preference, or it's like, oh, I love it all, just let me be in the show?
I do have a preference, so I'm very glad you asked that question. Acting is the first thing I love the most because I love the transformation into another character's shoes and living an experience that they are going through genuinely in that moment. So I really love the further the character is from me, if she's a cult leader or some like murderer at a gas station who's very blue collar or like, high power CEO, no matter what this character is, I love just taking on someone away from me. That is my first passion. Writing, I love a lot because once my own brain starts to amuse itself, it's like doing a puzzle. And there's something very satisfying when you write a piece that expresses your comedic voice, and then you also get to perform it. This character that you bring to life, but you've written these words and you say them with such genuine seriousness from the point of view of the character, not trying to make it funny, and it's funny that way. So I would say writing comes in a second. I enjoy the writing and piecing together. I've written a pilot and I enjoyed that experience, weaving together this puzzle piece of things. But it is a much more solitary activity, at least until you get to the point where you're existing in a writing room. So there are points where it almost gets harder to write by yourself because you're kind of in a vacuum and you need to be pushing yourself to create this piece and you don't know whether people will see it or where it may show, but you do it because you enjoy it. So it's kind of like writing it for somebody you love or for yourself is a great way to do that. Producing probably on the third of that because I feel like it's so closely connected in a business mindset and a problem-solving mindset from my previous occupation. It feels like for me personally, of the three, the least creative for me, and the more one involved with spreadsheets and signing contracts and solving problems when someone doesn't show up on set and these types of things. So, but it isn't like I said, something that you need to do. You're kind of, I've heard producing described as riding a bicycle, except you're on fire and everything else is on fire. So it's,
That's a great description.
yes. So it's that. I can do it, obviously, but if I had my druthers, it would be acting, maybe acting and writing at the same time, and then the last producing.
So on that writing side of things, I imagine that writing a story, writing a character, has different mental muscles than writing for, say, stand-up when you were doing your stand-up run. What did it, I guess I'm trying to come formulate that question. What was the different feeling in the way of putting together material that you're going to present for a crowd that's gonna, I guess, supposed to feel natural and dynamic and spontaneous, even though it's really not, compared to something that is more, it feels, maybe structured is the wrong word, but presented as a finished piece, as rather than something that's being one brick ahead of you or laying the tracks ahead of the train as you're going.
Well, stand up, is very, it looks like it's natural and it's effortlessly being done as just natural dialogue. That's the key where you want to get it to. But there is definitely a structure with the setup and then the punch and the different ways you can go with a punchline. And then you kind of segue into other things, move along. And of course, you have to deliver that naturally and respond with an audience in real time. So it is still a conversation you're having with the audience, but you need to have those punchlines and get the release of the audience with the laughter in the right way, but not in a way like you're trying to make them laugh. It needs to be in a surprising way. So there definitely is a joke writing element. When you're writing character pieces, for example, like a character monologue or a sketch or even longer format stuff, you don't need to worry about the jokes unless it's like a multicam sitcom where it's like five jokes per page, and you need this certain rhythm of pacing where the audience has to have these la the laughter coming in after the fact. So I would say that you have to really focus instead on the different points of view of the character. I've heard an excellent writing tip where you basically, there's two. One, if you have a group of characters and they're all having dinner at the same table together, these are all your characters in your script. If there's a glass of wine that's spilled on the tablecloth, will all your characters react differently? If they will all react the same way, you probably can combine some characters and you don't need to have because they should react differently. And then if you cover up in your script your characters' names, you should be able to tell who's speaking by the way they speak, as opposed to just needing to read the character names. And I think improv is extremely helpful from that because you can think in so many different people's points of view and different characters' mindsets that you're able to suddenly speak like them as you're writing, this improv. You hear these voices coming to you and they almost come to you in the way that they would speak, as opposed to I'm a writer and sitting at the keyboard and writing my own way that I speak. So that is definitely something as well. But I think I've learned don't worry about trying to make it funny. If you make it genuine from the character's point of view, it will be funny.
That seems to track for me, but that improv training, I assume, would help when things go wrong. You get that heckler in the crowd, whether it be a live show or something like that. Have you gotten the opportunity to be able to deal with a heckler and be able to come off of that in the way that you hoped?
I have to tell you, I've been one of the fortunate people who's obviously performed at either very nice places or has had nobody be that way with me. So I haven't had to deal with a negative heckler, but I've
Excellent.
had responses from audiences where they're like, yeah, like on board with what something is being said. So that is always a fun, entertaining thing when you make some type of joke and the audience responds in a highly favorable way. And sometimes, oddly, that can throw you for a second because they are so responsive to something in a way, and you need to stop and deal with that.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be startling. Get that spotlight on you. You're not really seeing everything. Just out of nowhere, somebody yells or does something, and it's like, wait, what was I doing again? Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the first time I did stand up, it was in a room of 200 people. And so it was definitely, well, this is happening. So you get up there and you get your 5 minutes and it's over. And I feel like the hour leading up to that was all I could do to be like, can I exit the building? Is there any way I can get out of this? This feeling. Then you get up there, you do it, and the second it's over, you're like, when can I do this again? It's such a weird thing that you put yourself through as a human being.
I've had a long love of that particular art form and how it's changed and how people have changed how they consume it, how they react to it, how they incorporate it, the one-liners turning into, small stories, into longer stories, into, whether it be political, philosophical diatribes, so much fun that you can have, especially if you have more than 5 minutes.
Yes.
Well, who has inspired you in your track record, whether that be actors, writers, directors? Who do you feel helps refill your cup when you're looking for that passion, that inspiration?
It's interesting because you really find it in many, many places, and it seems like a good performance. Like, sure, I have actors whose careers I admire, like Kristen Wiig, for example. She w was a groundling, and I happened to see her in person at the Groundlings maybe a month ago, and it was everything to me. She was fantastic, but it was so wonderful to see her, return to her roots. And I appreciate how hard the work is that she's done to do her characters and come up with her work, her writing, her screenplay, Bridesmaids. Other work that she's done since the new Palm Royale series, and these amazing characters she's doing. She's in Barb and Stargo to Vista Del Mar. I'm a huge fan of her work, and I think she's just incredible. But I know she works so very hard, and she loves what she does, and she's amazing at it. So I deeply admire her, and I find her inspiring. If I look in the other direction, I watch somebody like Walton Goggins. And I see him perform on Fallout, and I see him perform on Justified, and I see him on Sons of Anarchy, and I see him on The Righteous Gemstones. And man, do I love everything he does because he's so transformative, and every time he's a different character, and he is so great. So I just have such admiration for him. And I met him as well quite recently, and he was just like a gem of a person, and down to earth, and he's been working for a very long time, and he's got his Emmy nomination this year, so I'm just thrilled for him, and I think he's fantastic. Edie Patterson from The Righteous Gemstones is also a groundling, and boy, do I love her character, Judy Gemstone, on that show. She writes for herself as well, and some of the music she's written. I'm just, anybody who's like kind of doing some of the writing and really taking ownership over characters, that's where I find a ton of inspiration.
Yeah, it's important to I always felt to kind of have that bedrock to kind of know where you enjoy things yourself, and then that gives you the basis to start, and then know where to break away from, and kind of be your own player, your own actor, and it's always growth. A lot of times I hear that it's about the roles that you get sometimes push you in directions that you may not realize. Have you had a role that's pushed you in a direction that's revealed a new talent or revealed something that you didn't know that you were capable of?
Yes, many times I feel like characters that you take on, of course, they're not you. They're this other thing, but they do kind of change you in a little bit of a way because you've lived this different experience. I think there were two kind of student films that I did early on where I was like, oh, wow, these are very different people than me, but this is highly intriguing to get to do this. One was an AFI, actually, both were AFI films. So they get into experimental stuff for some of the first year students and they can really try different things. But I was this very mousy, quiet, actually like paralegal, legal assistant. But the stretch was I was a lady who was clearly very single and kept to herself and had pet rats. So I had to like take vacation photos with my rats before and have a pet rat, and I have this
Ha
clip on my reel with a pet rat, but I had to like learn to. Carolyn hates rats. This lady loves rats. This rat's name was Harold, her favorite. So, you know, it was like an interesting thing. But, you know, is there this lady who loved those things? Yes. And was I wholeheartedly that person in that moment? Yes. One of the other characters was a Civil War gender bend, and it was a supernatural element to this thing as well. So I was a Civil War sergeant, and I had like a Civil War uniform. I had all the weapons.
Nice.
It was just like, again, not me, but very far from me. And then through auditions, you know, like right now with self-tapes, actors do a lot of auditions. I get sometimes 200 auditions in a year, and I feel like every time I'm doing something, no character is ever the same. The words in the text and what I read and what I see about this person every time is like a slightly different variation of a different color of a person. So you suddenly have this Rolodex of people that you've walked in the shoes of. And, you know, I watch tapes back and I'm like, I don't laugh like that. I don't do whatever that weird mannerism was that I see on the tape afterwards. There's like these other behaviors that come on, but that I think comes through very intense character work where you're deliberately changing your voice, your face, your body, and your point of view, and even your energy. So the further you get from yourself, it's so interesting how you now have this like Rolodex of ways you can transform yourself based on what you read and what you're informed of who this person is. So I find it very surprising and very enjoyable. But yes, sometimes, you know, whatever the tape is, the character, I'm like, bucket list, eye patch character. Yes. You know, like whatever it was, there's some like weird things where I'm just like, I have always wanted to be the lady wearing the goggles, you know, and this crazy scientist woman or whatever, you know, it's anything like that is fun.
The person that, does not have any sort of inflection when they speak, it's just all sort of a monotone and there's nothing.
There's a lot of monotone. And there's people who have very high voices. You know, there's all...
Sometimes someone has an eggy voice and it's deep in the throat.
You know, there's all kinds of different things, but you make this person believable. You know, there's shades where this lives, and there's the medium for television, and there's a medium for live theater. There's everything in between, animation, voiceover, everything.
And you've done some voiceover work, right?
Yes. I did a radio play that was cast by SAG, and it was at the Autry Theater in Griffith Park. I think it was two performances, but it was like a reenactment of Father Knows Best. So I played the mother in that, and that was quite a fun thing to get to do in front of an audience and bring together this very interesting vibe of the past and with the little sound effects that were done live in the show. So that was great fun. And I did have a national voiceover booking as well for a commercial. So that was kind of an interesting thing to get to do as well. And of course, you know, auditioning for all these different characters for video games and animation and other things is just, you never know what you're going to get. And it's always a fun thing to hear your voice back and it doesn't sound anything like you.
That was actually one of my favorite things when I was looking at your website under the under the stuff that you had all, well, not all, but you had multiple instances. Here's some commercials work and just the auditory side of it. And it got me to thinking, it's like, okay, you're in a TV show, you're in a movie, you've gotten the script, you're learning the character. There's all this preparation to it. But with a commercial, do you put that much effort into it, or this goes like, no, just say it like this. No, just all we want is this.
Well, it's interesting because there is definitely, you know, a writer behind it who's written a message and they have heard this in their brain the way that they think it should be written. And so with a writer's hat, you kind of look at that and you do, I at least do a script analysis to understand things and pay attention to what is important in the messaging. And I research other commercials that the brand has done and what they're like and what they feel like and look like, you know, if it's on camera or voice, to get an understanding of the brand and the product and how their marketing looks like. You know, it needs to be in that family of things. It can't look like something completely different. And then it's like in all acting. You do all your preparation, and then when you're actually recording, you take it all and you throw it away, and you trust that the work that you did that is effective will stick, and everything else will then be natural.
I always, because I'm lucky enough to speak with several people in the industry, and I've managed to form, either through personal experience or through secondhand experience, a lot of the visuals of what goes into it. But still, that one thing always seems to escape me. I'll hear something, it won't stick, and it always goes back to like I'll instead imagine like the episode of Leverage where the character is trying to audition for a commercial and has already come up with the entire history of the character that they're going through, and she actually was going to kill her husband, that sort of thing. And just kind of how in depth do you get and how much fun that could be in the process.
Yes, well, it's definitely, like I said, for me, there is a lot of preparation, but in the moment, I don't think the intellect is very good at performing. And so it's not creative enough. It's too heavy-handed. And so I think then at that point, you're like, okay, I've done all the preparation. I know the things I need to know. I've looked at all these possibilities. I've explored things. I've done the work. And then in that moment, you trust and you have to really be 100% at ease and in the moment and just do whatever comes, genuinely, because otherwise it won't translate as being real. So.
Yeah. So this sounds like it's an out of the pocket question, but it's not, and I'm sure you already know it's not. But I have to ask, are you a fan of comic books at all?
I have actually, I have to say, I like comic book series. So I tend to get into like graphic novel series. If
Right.
I get into like the televised version of that, I get quite heavily into that. I think it's because I love the telling of things once it's been brought on screen. So I am like, a sucker for when it comes to, I watched all of The Walking Dead, which is a graphic novel brought to life. I love The Boys on Amazon, which is very comic booky, but it's very irreverent and very surprising. But I like the element of surprise and not knowing what's going to happen in any given episode. So, the realm of those types of things I quite enjoy, but I don't know that I can freely say that I have marched many times into a comic book store, although I have. There's one on Melrose here. And I did actually, my film that I wrote back in 2017 was a comedy about superheroes and speed dating. So I picked very mainstream superheroes and had them as their alter egos in a speed dating session, answering questions truthfully as themselves, but making it then seem like, of course, how strange they are.
That's got to be a
So.
lot of fun. So the ones that you mentioned that started as comic books, The Boys and The Walking Dead, strayed from their original source material. They had to because of either the length of the series or the way the medium or a variety of things. But you were just on a show that also strayed from its source material in a couple of different ways, but is still kind of awesome. Well, they've all been awesome, even with the straying. And I have to ask what it was like to be able to be involved with an episode of The Umbrella Academy.
That was absolutely incredible. It was a very, very exciting experience. Of course, that show films in Canada, of all places. And I got to travel from LA to go back to Canada to do that. It's interesting. It seems like you go and then you're suddenly given opportunities to do things back at home. So it was a very exciting experience. It was a very wonderful thing to take in the magic of how they make it look so incredible on film from the environments that they have and the sets that they build and the detail that goes down. And of course, I can't say enough about Elliot Page. Elliot Page is a phenomenal performer, and it was just wonderful to see them act in person. There was an Emmy nominated director, a BAFTA nominated director who was directing the episode. So it was an incredible experience to get to work with someone of that caliber, and see them take, wonderful control of a scene that involved many, many moving parts. It was one of the opening scenes in the beginning of the fourth season. So it was kind of setting up obviously a great storyline to come for season four and the final season of the show. So, you know, when you look at something iconic and it's coming to a conclusion, to have an opportunity to be a part of something that is such a great piece of work and so intriguing, and the storytelling so wonderful, the universe that they build with such a wonderful cast of characters, it's just, you know, like a bucket list thing to get to do, to say I was on the show and had an opportunity to play a part in telling a fantastic story.
Yeah, I always get that imagining. I just being on the set of any of the number of films that I've loved over the years, I'd turn into Pee Wee Herman in his own film, you know, kind of a thing. You know, hello, Mr. Whatever. You know, just give me one line. I'll walk on, I'll walk off. That would be fine, just to be able to see it. But with a production like this that's been going on for multiple years and has its own stride and its own style, and it's kind of this established thing, was there anything about the way they put this together that struck you as unique or different from some of the other productions that you've been involved with?
I think every show obviously has its own feel and uniqueness of the way that they did it. I thought, you know, there was a interesting moment on how the director chose to direct two contrasting things that took place in the opening of that scene. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but the opening scene when we first see Elliot Page in that episode, it's interesting to get to see the contrast of how they chose the opening frame of the shot to the second frame of the shot by panning the camera over and creating two contrasts. So just the use of humor injected into the style that they do was really incredible to see. The thought that's put into that when it's not mentioned in the script, but it's done on hand by a director who obviously knows the vibe of the show and is telling the same show, even though they bring on these multiple directors for different episodes. They know and feel it's an Umbrella Academy show, and they know what that needs to deliver, and it needs to have this playful kind of light thing going on under the surface in addition to what's going on. It's a visual treat.
Yeah, I know. I've definitely enjoyed the source material, and I've enjoyed the show quite a bit. And it's fun to see imaginations allowed to run wild a little bit and produce some interesting things. So, all right, now something a little more personal. You've got something that will be coming out very soon. I'm hoping very soon. Is completed by the name of Her Best. I was hoping you could give us just a little bit of a taste of what that is and what we can expect.
Sure. Well, it's a CalArts project from a Greek filmmaker taking her master's in film there. This was her thesis piece, and it was a film that was very dear to her about Greek culture and customs that take place when there is a wedding. So there is an event, which I don't want to spoil and give away, that takes place on the day of the wedding, and the lead of the film has a choice to make about whether or not to proceed with the wedding on this day. There's bad decisions that are made that go from bad to worst, and what I enjoyed it is I actually booked the audition through an improv. I did not receive a script, and I was asked to improvise a scene. I improvised the scene and then got the script and realized I had a very large portion of dialogue throughout the balance of the film. So I was kind of the comedic relief in the film of this secret. And so it was wonderful to get to play this person who is just that loud aunt who is there and in everybody's face and oblivious to what is going on in reality. So it was a delicious character to play, because again, that's not like me. I'm a very polite Canadian, not doing those things, but to be so free to live in someone's skin and do all these things, it's exhilarating. So I was a real treat of a character who I'm sure, you know, the loud flowery dress I was given to wear even says it all, the energy of this woman in the midst of that. I was the chaos in the storm brewing.
I love it. Being chaos can be a lot of fun, provided, you know, you don't mind the fallout afterwards.
Yes.
All right. Well, how about this? How about a hypothetical question? It's one of my favorites. I always love to ask this, especially since you're in LA. This is I've tailored it to LA specifically. I want you to use your imagination. You're out and about. You've got a day off. You don't have anything going. You decide to take a little walk to a local bistro and have a nice lunch. And you notice that they've dressed all the tables very nicely. And there's just a really nice little lamp at your table. And you pick it up and you rub it. And poof, genie! A genie sitting across the seat from you in a $3,000 suit and sunglasses. And hands you his card, says, you have three wishes, but I'm actually an industry genie. So specifically, the wishes are to do with the industry. You can work with any three people that you would like to work with, whether they be actors, directors, writers, living or dead. Who would you choose and why?
Ooh, that's a hard one, because I have a long list of people that I love, 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 love. Okay, Kristen Wiig comes up right away. I can't help but say enough about her, because I just think she's tremendous. So I will definitely have to say her. I sat, you know, maybe 4 feet from her, and I felt like I was like on top of the entire universe, just to be able to just get to witness her in person. So that would be one. Two, I would have to say, I probably would love to work with Walton Goggins, because I do love his work. And I think he's such a tremendous performer, and he's so great with his character work. I would love to get to perform with him. You know, if I had a bucket list, there's two people that I think if we're including the people who are no longer with us.
Absolutely.
I had a great love as a child for John Ritter. I have to tell you, I loved watching him in Three's Company, and I would come home and I was like in grade whatever, young, and I would be watching Three's Company, and I thought he was so funny. And I think now in LA, I'm fortunate enough to do improv with some people who were improvising with John Ritter. I now understand what was all behind the magic of how he did what he did. You know, if I would have had a chance to work with him, I think that would have been tremendous. And I'd be remiss to not say Robin Williams in the same regard, because magic, right? Magic.
Yeah.
Creative genius. So I don't know. I would have a very long list. I would sit down and probably write forever all the people.
Give me a minute.
Yeah. But those would immediately come to mind.
Good choices. Gotta love the choice of John Ritter there. He's in one of my favorite movies of all time, Noises Off. And just seeing him be able to be able just effortlessly carry off physical and verbal comedy just seamlessly around everybody else who is just captains of the industry, so to speak, just amazing legends. And yeah, that's a great one there. And of course,
there's a great clip I found on YouTube, because it was so strong in my memory I had to find it and view it. And it's him where he, I think, has some like sleeping pill or medication that he takes that gets mixed with alcohol, and he's at a party and he suddenly starts dancing, and there's like a shaker and he's dancing to this song. He ends up with a plant on his head. Ends up passing out, but it's like a 2 minute long dance sequence of him just going insane, dancing with a lamp and pulling a lady over, and people are stopping and staring, and it's marvelous.
Yeah, you're not kidding. That's the good stuff. That's what life is about, is enjoying the good stuff. And that's kind of one of the reasons that we have food in the name of our podcast with pudding.
Yes.
Because food brings people together, and that brings us to our second hypothetical question, not nearly as imaginative maybe as the first, but it's about food. So we notice that most people love pizza, so we always check, are you a pizza person? And if you are, what kind of pizza person are you?
Okay, I am 100% a pizza person, but I have to tell you, I have had the world's best pizza. Two blocks from where I am here on Melrose Avenue, it's a chain in LA called Lucifer's Pizza.
Heard of it.
They actually have a gluten-free pizza, but it is the best gluten-free pizza, because it actually tastes like regular pizza. It's great cold the next day. It's like thin and crispy. It's not soggy. and they have tremendous toppings. I'm a meatitarian, so I must have meat on my pizza. So I like there's a pizza called the Three Little Pigs, and it's basically like, bacon and ham and that type of stuff on it. It's delicious. And then I love the Meat Lovers pizza as well. Occasionally, when my husband's ordering, he will like throw on red peppers or onions because he feels I need some vegetables. So I will take those if he makes me have them. But I have to tell you, I love pizza. Yes.
That's always a great thing. You can almost always find a pizza for anybody, whether it's the deep dish or the thin slice or whatever. It's just one of those, I don't want to call it comfort food because it's more universal than that. It's the thing that we can all have pretty much
It's my
universally.
island food. If I was on an island, I could probably live on only pizza. If I had to live on only one food for the balance of my life, morning, breakfast, whatever it is, I could probably survive okay on that on a daily basis.
Well, dear listeners, don't forget to check out her episode of the Umbrella Academy that she was in. Her Best coming out very soon. When did you say that Her Best was going to be releasing?
It's in the festival circuit now, and it's got a screening in two screenings in Canada in October, one in Calgary, Alberta, and one in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I don't know when the release will be, but usually that's after the festival circuit.
There's another project you're involved with called How to Die Alone coming out in September that we can also catch you on. But if we want to know other things that you're involved with, whether you decide to take another set list to a local comedy club or you're in a local play, where should we follow you?
Well, for information on whatever it might be coming up, because as an actor, you never know on any given day what is your next thing. It's constantly the next job. You don't know until the last minute. But when I'm able to share any news, I do post it on social media. So I post on my Twitter and on my Instagram and on Facebook. When I'm allowed to say something, that's where I will put it. My Twitter and Instagram is at Carolyn B. Kennedy with the middle initial. And then on Facebook, I'm Carolyn Bridget Kennedy. It's one of those wonderful things where you don't know, you wake up and you don't think you have anything happening that particular day. And suddenly you have three auditions, you're taping for something, and then you find out the next day you're on a plane going somewhere. So it's one of those fun things where everything changes in a moment. I generally, as well, I'm at the Groundlings. I do improv shows and I do sketch comedy shows there. I generally try to post and be pretty open with where I'll be making any appearances. I will be attending the screening of Her Best in Calgary. It actually is my hometown in Canada, and I will be there for that screening.
Awesome. Calgary. I believe that's also the hometown of Bret Hart.
Yes, it is. It is very much the legendary Hart family.
That's
That is
right.
correct.
That's right. Well, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to come on and talk shop with us a little bit. Tell us a little about how you do what you do and what will be coming up. And I hope that we will be able to talk to you again and you'll get that chance to be on the same stage as maybe a Walter. Or sorry, Walton Goggins. I always do that with his name. I want to say Walter every single time.
I'm sure he gets that a lot.
But thank you again, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again soon.